By now, you've heard plenty about what people call the sixth great extinction. We're losing species of plants and animals at an alarming rate in the world. Often the causes are indirect. We don't kill the animals. We just take away their habitat or their food supply, and they die off. But in Africa, the dangers to elephants are humans with guns, plain and simple. Elephant poaching remains a big problem as people kill the elephants for their valuable ivory tusks. Today's guest works to end the poaching. Pratik Patel is the founder and chair of the African Wildlife Trust, with the basic idea of making sure that we can put a dent, if not an actual end, to poaching in Africa. Pratik Patel, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
Tell us a bit about yourself. You come from a family of safari leaders. I mean, tell us what you and they have done over the years.
Yes, I actually grew up in the Serengeti as a young boy in Tarangire. So I've literally grown up in the bush from the time I was born. And I spent all my years in the bush. I was very fortunate to go to boarding school in England, spent a number of years in England in boarding school. As you know, a lot of the bush kids living out in Africa, you know, education is a big problem. So we are fortunate to have had that education in England. I came back and I served military service for 2 years and then went through university in Tanzania in business, and then went back to England, got another degree, undergraduate degree, and then came back and joined my family business running safaris in Tanzania.
Was there a particular point at which you said, I've got to do something different? I've got to move apart from what I'm doing now?
You know, in 2008, you know, I've extensively lived all around Tanzania, and I've spent a great many hours and days and months in the bush. And in 2008, once we had that little one-off sale by Namibia, South Africa, Zimbabwe, and Botswana, you know, there was a ban on ivory, as you know, in 1989. And the population suddenly grew to a stable level, but you know, there was a huge debate going on whether, you know, the ivory stockpiles that were sitting in Africa should be sold and the money should go back to conservation. So there was an experiment saying, well, let's try and sell the stockpile and see, and let's put the money back into conservation. The thought was very good, but once they did that one-off sale, we certainly saw a spike in 2008, and I was very involved in one of the big game reserves called the Selous, which is 55,000 square kilometers in size. And I was seeing, you know, elephant carcasses, but not so many. But in coming to 2009, 2010, you know, I was driving on concessions about, you know, 500 square kilometers in size. The Selous has been divided into different concessions. And I started seeing, you know, between 7 and 8 carcasses of elephant going, you know, dead elephants. And that spike really picked up in 2009, 2010, 2011, to the extent that we were losing approximately 30 elephants a day in Tanzania alone. And that's about 10,000 elephants a year. So that's a lot of dead elephants that you see.
Which, based on other numbers, I notice, is either about a third or even a half of the number of elephants that die in Africa every year, in one country.
That's just one country, yeah. In Africa, we lose between 25 and 30,000 elephants, up to 35,000 elephants. And these are figures that have been verified. You know, we spend a lot of time in the bush looking at carcasses. We GPS them. We photograph them. We examine them to see what sort of firearms were used to take these elephants down. So it gives us an indication of what we're dealing with as a foot patrol, ground patrol, in case we run into these poachers. And so Africa loses between, say, 25 and 30,000 elephants a year. But Tanzania itself is losing 10,000 elephants a year.
That is a huge number.
Yeah. So that's actually literally one-third of what's been lost in Africa.
You talked about the one-off sale being well-intentioned. So the idea was the Tanzanian government was going to sell off stockpiled and confiscated ivory?
That's correct, yes. You know, there's a school of thinking, you know, and like I said, you know, all the conservation organizations really debate the subject, whether the ivory that the stockpile is sitting in confiscated ivory should be sold and the money should go to conservation. And that's why they allowed the one-off sale. In 2013, Tanzania did apply for an application to CITES International to sell off. We have 134 tons of ivory in our warehouse. Just to give you an idea, 134 tons of ivory, that's over 200,000 dead elephants that's sitting in our warehouse right now.
Wow.
That's a lot, yeah.
From 200,000 elephants.
That's ivory from 200,000, approximately 200,000 elephants. So Tanzania's intention was to apply for the sale. But this spike is not going to, you know, currently in Africa and currently right now as we speak in Tanzania, we're doing a population census. It's too early to say the figures, but I estimate between 50 and 60,000 elephants left in Tanzania. The Selu Game Reserve alone had 110,000 elephants not too long ago. We lost almost 60% of elephants in the Selu Game Reserve. We did a comprehensive survey, population census in the Selu last year. We were down to 13,000 elephants from 110,000 elephants. So wow. It tells you the magnitude of the poaching that's going on in the country.
Almost 100,000 elephants lost in just that one area. We'll come back and talk more with Pratik Patel, the founder and chair of the African Wildlife Trust, about the poaching of elephants in Africa and what the African Wildlife Trust is doing to combat that. He's obviously on tour in the United States right now to get the point across. We'll talk more with him and with you when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute five. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Pratik Patel from Tanzania. He's the founder and chair of the African Wildlife Trust, which is an organization created to combat the poaching of elephants in Africa, poaching them for their valuable ivory, which is still doing a booming business on the black market. And in the process, elephants are dying by the score. And as you heard him mention just a few moments before the break, in one particular part of Tanzania, there could be as many as 100,000 elephants that have died just in the past how many years? Last 3 years. Pratik Patel is our guest on the exchange. You can join us at 800-838-3760 anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782 by email jx@jeffnet.org. You did mention it's been since 1989 that there's been a ban on ivory from CITES, the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species. So basically that outlawed any legal pathway to sell ivory?
That's correct, yes.
But there was a period of time, as you indicated earlier, where things seemed to be pretty good.
No, the poaching crisis in the 70s and 80s was detrimental to the elephant population, and the outcry from the world and Africa initiated the ban on total ban on ivory, any legal trade or any sort of trade in ivory in the ivory species. But what they did is they lifted that ban. And they allowed limited trade in ivory. In 2008, South Africa, Botswana, Zimbabwe, and Namibia had stockpiles, which they made an application to CITES, the governing body, and they were allowed to dispose of their ivory. And the intention was good. The money was going to go back to conservation. So the idea was good. But what happened is that created a spike, the demand for ivory again. And now there is a big drive to put a permanent ban on ivory. Just to give you an idea, we estimate currently between 400 and 450,000 elephants on the African continent. Not so long ago, there were between 5 and 10 million elephants roaming the African continent. So you can see the drop in population. The appetite from Southeast Asia, China mainly, is so big that they make family seals, they make carvings, they put ivory embedded into furniture, and if this continues, 450,000 elephants, and if we're losing between 25 and 30,000 elephants a year, if you look at the figures, within 7 to 10 years we will have no elephants on the African continent. There'll be literally a genocide of elephant going on right now.
It seems like a very bad time in history to go ahead and put ivory out there on the market, because a lot of the market is in Asia, and this is at a very time when the rise of the Chinese middle class is quite pronounced, and I'm thinking this is probably one of the places where the major market is.
China is the biggest market. It's the single biggest market, and you're absolutely right in saying that the middle class in China is growing so rapidly, and their appetite for ivory is certainly is very symbolic. It symbolizes wealth, and they don't really realize the effect they're having on the African continent and the species. A lot of the Chinese believe that the elephant ivory just drops out. They lose their teeth.
Like a loose teeth, yeah.
Like a loose teeth, which is not true. And there's a huge drive now in China by all the conservation organizations to create the awareness and to tell them that this is the reality. The elephants do not lose their teeth. They're shot by AK-47s and high-powered rifles. And it's annihilating a whole species.
Let's take some calls here. We have Patrick and Ashland on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Pratik Patel from the African Wildlife Trust.
Good morning. This is very dear to my heart. I appreciate you, Mr. Patel, for doing this. I've been trying to get some effect for years, and to no avail. I've written the senators. We are China's largest trading partner, if I'm not wrong about that. We ground up a whole bunch of ivory recently, locally, and I didn't feel good about that. I you know, it's a very complex issue, but besides the fact that I boycott, I really try not to buy anything Chinese, which is obviously a, you know, difficult in and of itself. Is there anything that the average person who cares about this can do besides not trying to try not to buy anything Chinese?
All right. Thanks for that, Patrick. Appreciate it.
You know, the, one of the big things that I'm out here in the U.S. Is to create the awareness, because besides the demand for ivory from China, a lot of people do not realize that we have a crisis in Africa right now. You know, we have the Al-Shabaab, we have SPLA, we have LRA. These are factions within the M23 working out of DRC. The Janjaweed in Sudan, these are just some examples. And these militia groups are very involved, very sophisticated crime groups that are poaching our elephants to raise billions of dollars to fund their war. And the demand is from China. So we really need to turn to China to stop the demand so that we can stop the genocide that's going on in Africa. And it's not just the elephant genocide. You've seen the Darfur genocide. But a lot of the money that comes from ivory actually funds civil wars, genocides within the African continent.
So it's certainly to their benefit, horrible as it may be for the elephants and for the world at large, to go ahead and take the tusks, because they can make a lot of money in a very easy transaction.
That's correct. You know, we've for many years we've spoken about Blood Diamond and the cruelty and all that exists around there. And a lot of people for a long time have not realized. But the wildlife resources of Africa are used to fund these organizations. They're very sophisticated, like I said before. They're very well funded. There's a lot of will. They come into the reserves. They're very well organized, sophisticated weapons. They outnumber the rangers. Unfortunately, we underfunded, and we are dealing with an organized crime syndicate. So the world needs to turn to stop this, because it's not just about the genocide of the elephant and genocide of people, but, you know, this is becoming a global problem in the Islamic states, where they're promoting violence. We've seen ISIS right now. We've seen Al-Shabaab. We've seen M23. We've seen the Janjaweed. So there is enough connection of where they're making the money. And the illegal ivory trade and the illegal bushmeat market has been funding that very quietly, and it has gone unnoticed for many years. And it's now time for the world to turn around and really put a stop to this whole thing.
Which is just incredible to think about. But then you realize, well, if these are terrorist organizations, they don't care a whole lot about human life, so why would they care any more about elephant life?
Absolutely. They have actually no remorse in killing an elephant or any animal species. You know, their motive is to get the ivory. You know, I'm not sure if you're aware, in 2013, the wholesale market in China was about, you know, $1,500 a kilo for ivory. There's been figures right now about 2,500, but the street value of 1 kilo of ivory is between $5,000 and $6,000 right now in China. So you can imagine, if we shoot an elephant, you know, or if they poach an elephant, you're looking at between 10 and 20 kilos, depending on the age, up to 30 kilos. So you're talking big money here.
And obviously nobody's going to say, well, okay, I would feel bad if they went extinct, but I'll be rich by then.
Well, you know, I think it's all materialistic. It's all about money, and they don't really care for the species.
Let's take another call. We have Grumpy John and Grants Pass on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Pratik Patel, the founder and chair of the African Wildlife Trust.
Thank you. Mr. Patel, would it be possible to go out and stain the tusks of the living elephants so that their value would be reduced, A, and B, you would know from henceforth, if you're getting a purple tinge in your ivory, you're buying poached ivory. I realize it would be a massive undertaking, but it might save some elephant lives.
All right. Thanks for that, Grumpy John.
It's a good question. It's a very time consuming effort. Secondly, we're struggling to keep the rangers in the bush. We don't have enough funding to patrol these areas. But like I said, the illegal wildlife trade is over a $10 billion market. The money going into conservation is very, very limited. So we don't have enough money to do that. Secondly, we've seen evidence of the Chinese grinding and crushing the ivory down into fine powder and then reassembling it with, compounding again with glue back in China. And then they make a carving out of it or bangles and they polish it really well so you don't really know the difference.
Then it seems to me there should be some sort of synthetic alternative for ivory. I mean, if they're going to go grind the ivory down and recompose it with glue, they could easily take something else that's hard and white and shiny and make that with glue and not have to take any elephants.
You're absolutely right. But, I think traditionally in China, I think to own a piece of ivory has a huge status symbol. I have some photographs of a guy that sold a vehicle for $2.7 million, and he had all the consoles in his vehicle and his whole vehicle, covered with ivory carving and so forth. And that's one example. I've seen about 7 or 8 photographs like that within China where people buy ivory and decorate the car just to show their symbolic wealth. Yeah, and it's a way of showing off, in short.
Pratik Patel, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the founder and chair of the African Wildlife Trust, which works to prevent the poaching of elephants for their valuable ivory tusks, which is a big problem. As you heard, you could get $5,000 for a kilogram of ivory on the black market these days. Join us on the Exchange with your questions, your comments, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. I did see a couple of news stories online where elephants were tranquilized in the bush and their tusks cut off for their safety. This seems like an even bigger job than Grumpy John's idea of staining the tusks, and it makes you smile clearly. Why?
There was a school of thinking saying that, we could immobilize elephant and reduce or cut their tusk, but it doesn't really work. It's something that's failed because, as you know, there's a nerve inside an elephant tooth, and when you cut the elephant tooth off, you take away its natural defense system. They rely heavily on those tusks to peel out bark from the trees, to dig out salt licks and so forth. So, in essence, you're literally signing a death sentence for those poor elephants in the bush by trimming, and also bear in mind that if you have a meter and a half of ivory, you could probably take the first 18-20 inches off, and then you hit the nerve. So as soon as you cut the nerve, you basically damage the whole tooth. There's an infection. It's just like your normal tooth. Mm-hmm. There's a nerve, so you can only take a certain percentage of that ivory off. So it doesn't really work. It's something that the idea was good, but it's failed. It's not going to work.
So where do you focus your efforts then at the African Wildlife Trust? Where are the major efforts you're making?
Our major efforts right now are in Tanzania, Kenya, and Uganda. Mm-hmm. And we focus a little bit on South Sudan. And we're supporting rangers on the ground, patrolling. I'm very heavily involved with being on patrol most of the time, looking for poachers and evidence of poaching in the area. I personally, over the last 5 years, I've been in the bush. I've finally gave up photographing dead elephants. I kind of photographed about 2,600 dead elephants and GPSed them. And it got to a stage where I couldn't take any more.
They take the whole head off, don't they?
They literally just hack off the front of the head. Mm-hmm. And it's very, very sad. You have an elephant that weighs between 5,000-7,000 kilos, 7 tons of if it's a big bull, and you just see this whole carcass rotting in front of you, and all you see is the front head face that's hacked off, just for the ivory.
That would be tough after a while. So you mentioned, though, trying to get more rangers out into the bush. First of all, are there firefights sometimes between rangers and poachers?
Oh, yes. We run into firefights all the time, and the casualties on both sides. I've been in incidents where I've lost in a firefight. I shared it recently, a photograph at a presentation, and we ended up having to shoot 6 poachers, and we lost 2 of our rangers in the process. Yes, this fight is very real. The rangers do put their lives on the line, and it's a battle out there. It's a war.
You mentioned AK-47s in the hands of the poachers. I mean, are you similarly armed with the Rangers?
We also have AK-47s, but, you know, because of underfunding, sometimes we're only using bolt action 30-06s, 30-08s, you know, 375s. So we don't have sophisticated weapons like they do. They're coming in more and more sophisticated with night vision, armor-piercing bullets, all military-grade weaponry, because obviously, you know, there's a lot of those weapons in Somalia, South Sudan, you know, DRC, trickling down into East Africa, not just East Africa, but also into countries like Gabon, CR, Benin, that have the, you know, forest species. As you know, in Africa, we have two species of elephants. We have the forest species and we have the savanna species. I would literally say right now, very comfortably, probably about 70% of the forest species of elephants have been wiped out. And now, you know, they're making their way down to East Africa, Kenya, Tanzania. That sits on the second largest elephant population in Africa. And they're now being detrimental to our populations down here.
When you say DRC, Democratic Republic of the Congo?
Democratic Republic of Congo, yes.
We have another call here. It's Dean in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking to Pratik Patel about elephant poaching. He's the founder and chair of the African Wildlife Trust.
Yes. Thank you for being here. It's quite interesting because today I was going to call the Jane Goodall organization and see if there was a way we could contribute to an organization like hers or yours to hire the poachers to protect the elephants. So that's the idea. Hire the poachers to protect. What they're doing is for money, so hire them and pay them from contributions, and I would contribute to something like that.
All right, hiring the poachers. Interesting concept. Let's take it up with Pratik. Thanks for the call, Dean.
That's a very good question, and you're absolutely right. One of our biggest focuses is to try, when we do arrest poachers, is to try and convert them and become our informers and become our rangers. So our big drive is to hire poachers and make them work for us and try and turn them to become the good people. And we've succeeded very well, and we do have a lot of poachers that actually work with us, and that's where we get all our intelligence gathering from. So we send them back down into the communities to find out who's requesting ivory, who are the buyers, where's the feed, the routes going into the warehouses in Dar es Salaam or in Nairobi. Also, we've seen a lot of ivory being, you know, shipped out into local dhows on the Indian coastline. And then they make the international waters, and then the bigger dhows pick them up and take them into Somalia and the Middle East. We've seen some Chinese fishing boats also picking up ivory. So, yeah, these poachers are very, very important for us. It's a great idea. It's worked very, very successful. And we certainly encourage hiring poachers because if we can turn them, they become a valuable source of where the ivory is being sold and who's buying.
What motivates their turn? Is it altruism, the idea that they don't want to be part of the elephant poaching process anymore, or is it more money?
It's financially, you know, motivated, I have to be honest, because you can see that, you know, if they in Africa, for example, on the Chinese market, a kilo of ivory will sell for between $4,000-$6,000. You know, and in Tanzania, for example, where I'm based and working right now, you know, a poacher would make between $400 and $600 a kilo. So he's not getting the full value. But, you know, if you look at Africa, you know, an average family lives on less than a dollar a day, of a family of five. So the incentive, you know, if you're making $400 or $500 a kilo, and if you have 10 kilos of ivory of a small elephant, a very small elephant, the financial reward is very, very high. I mean, that's more money in one day than they would make in a whole year. So the incentive is far greater financially. So we do have to motivate them financially. But, you know, you can also reason with them because, you know, we are out in the bush. They're going to run into us, and eventually there's going to be loss of life. Hopefully, this is something that we want to avoid. We don't want to be there. It's not a job to kill people, but we do have a, you know, shoot on site policy if they do engage with us, and that's something that we want to avoid.
You shoot them on site?
Yes.
If you can, I mean, you have to verify they're involved in poaching somehow, don't you?
Yeah, and unless they engage with us, you know, it's not our job to. We don't believe in killing, but if they're going to engage, and if you have somebody waving an AK-47 with you or floating a clip of 30 rounds, you're going to do your job and take the person down.
All right. Yeah. Interesting times in the African bush. Pratik Patel is our guest. He's the founder and chair of the African Wildlife Trust. We'll come back and talk more with him and take more of your phone calls and emails when we return to the Jefferson Exchange to talk about elephant poaching in a minute 10. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking today about elephant poaching with Pratik Patel, who is the founder and chair of the African Wildlife Trust. His family has been in the safari business for a long time, and after a while, they had just had enough of watching elephants being killed for their valuable ivory on the black market, where you can get about $5,000 to $6,000 a kilogram for ivory. And so, of course, there's great incentive for people to go out there and kill the elephants, and they are doing so by the tens of thousands a year by several measures in Tanzania, where Pratik Patel is from. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Do you have another speaking event while you're still in the Rogue Valley?
I'm speaking tomorrow at the Rotary Club in Medford. Mm-hmm.
Rogue Valley Country Club. Okay, so that one. There are several different Rotary Clubs in Medford. Okay, and is that probably noon on Tuesday? All right, all right. So coming back to the issue of money, I mean, you can make it worth the while to pay some of the poachers. Do you pay them as well as they can get paid for bringing in ivory, or at least close enough to make them comfortable?
Close enough to make them comfortable. I mean, we certainly don't have the kind of money that, you know, they would make from ivory. We can't compete with that. But I think we can try and convince them from a humanitarian perspective, you know, and saying, listen, you know, this is something that you need to stop, because eventually you're going to lose life and you're going to have a family, a wife, kids with no father to support them. So, you know, how long are you going to continue? And especially once we know who they are, and if they continue to do it, then, you know, if there's a chance that we're going to run into that same person, individual again, and they may lose that may mean losing a life.
There's so much money involved in the transaction, obviously, though. Assuredly, and I believe this is well demonstrated, too, they can certainly pay enough to bribe game officials, too, to look the other way.
Absolutely. And that's one of the biggest challenges. You know, the level of corruption goes from the game scouts in the bush to all the way to the top. You know, we have corrupt individuals in every sector and every department that will facilitate this. And that's one of the biggest challenges that we face in Africa as well.
We have another call here. Here's Brad in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about elephant poaching with Pratik Patel.
Thank you. This subject is so sad and so angering. The innocent creatures are being slaughtered just because people want to make money at it. So I have a suggestion that's probably the worst idea I've ever put out on the radio. And then I have a question. The suggestion is that anybody involved in the chain of poachers, all the way to the guy with his car with all the ivory around it, that they be fair game to have their teeth taken, and that we make a kind of an industry out of the high value teeth that we take out of these people, and create jewelry and things like that. It might put the scare into them so they don't be involved in this. The game wardens, the buyers, anybody.
Almost a tooth for a tusk, in a sense.
Yeah,
not to be too flippant.
Yeah, thank you. And I actually feel that you know, if there's some way to fund that would be a way to change this whole phenomenon. That my question has to do with the I see news reports where they burn existing tusks, and somehow they think this is going to help the whole situation. I don't see the logic of that at all, and it seems to me that there's a supply and demand, and that the existing tusks are just being wasted, and it just creates less supply, and so the demand goes higher. And we're never patient enough as humans to wait until these old elephants finally die and then take their tusk in an honorable fashion.
So. All right. Thanks for that, Brad. Appreciate it.
You know, Brad, what's sad is that, yes, you know, the burning is a very symbolic, the crushing and burning is a very symbolic issue. And why Africa has chosen to do that is sometimes you have huge stockpiles. An example, you know, of Tanzania, we have, you know, 134 tons of ivory in our strong rooms. Zimbabwe has probably about 55 tons. These are just a few examples. The reason we don't want to keep them in our strong rooms and have symbolic burns is because sometimes you have corrupt officials who will take ivory stock out of strong rooms and sell it. And then when they do an audit again, they'll go shoot some more ivory and replace it. So like I said, in 2008, they did allow, you know, a one-off sale again, and that triggered off a spike. So we certainly do not want ivory in the marketplace. It hasn't worked. It has failed. And hence, instead of keeping them into strong rooms, it's best just to destroy it. Yes, it does drive up. I see where you're coming from. It does drive up the price of ivory. But, you know, if you look at Africa right now, with 450,000 elephants left compared to 5 million not many years ago, we don't have many elephants left. And so the demand will continue. So even if we do sell the stockpile, yes, we can raise, you know, $100 billion from that stockpile, and it will be wonderful for conservation. But what happens when we run out of that stockpile is the demand will still continue. I mean, you're talking about China, you know, a billion people, and if everybody wants a family seal, the 450,000 elephants are certainly not going to fulfill that appetite of family seals in China alone. So the maths and the ratio doesn't work right now.
How do you adjust that demand cycle, though? Because it's, you know, at least with ivory, there is a representational thing there, as opposed to, for example, ground-up rhinoceros horn, which has proven to have no medicinal powers whatsoever, and yet people still continue to go ahead and provide a market for the poaching of rhinoceros as well.
That's correct. And if you see in South Africa, you know, we're losing about 1,000 rhinos every year. And, you know, just to give you an idea, a gram of rhinoceros horn costs between $2,500 to $3,000 a gram. It costs you more for a gram of rhinoceros horn than a gram of cocaine today. And there's absolutely no medical evidence to support the fact that, you know, rhinoceros horn has any medical properties to cure heart attacks or impotence or, you know, all sorts of other things, that beliefs that the Southeast Asian countries have. But yet, you know, there's a myth. And you know, the question is, where does it stop? I can just tell you, you know, they make very expensive wine out of tiger bones. They're running out of tiger bones. So, you know, suddenly we've seen a spike in lion bones and leopard bones from Africa. So suddenly, we're picking up sex and seizures where we suddenly find lion bones in there. And it goes to China so they can make expensive wine. And these bottles of wine are selling for like, you know, $8,000 a bottle. So where does it stop? You know, we just need to try and focus on addressing China and try and educate them to really stop. Sanctions are a good idea, in my personal opinion. You know, politically, it may not be correct, but, you know, having heavy sanctions against countries that are encouraging, you know, the illegal wildlife trade would be a good idea. That's a good start. I just saw a seizure 4 days ago of pangolin, 1,500 pangolin. You know, so it's not just about ivory. You know, the demand from Southeast Asia is so huge on the illegal wildlife trade that, you know, we need to really educate them and put really heavy sanctions against these countries that are going to promote and encourage trade in illegal wildlife.
Let's take another call. We have John and Vanita on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Pratik Patel from the African Wildlife Trust.
Morning, Jeffrey. Good morning, Pratik.
Good morning, sir.
Hi.
This has troubled me for years. It really, really bothers me immensely. And I'm listening to you talk about the Rangers being underfunded and undergunned, and there's just no real reason for that to be happening, not in this world. I mean, what I wanted to ask, have you approached anybody for sponsors that would help set you up with better equipment? I mean, a sporting version of an AR-10 American rifle is just a great all-around hunting gun, and it puts you way ahead of an AK-47. I mean, you got way more range, way more power. It would make things better. Mm-hmm. And if you could get funded, and then maybe ammunition, MREs, or whatever else you might need, if you get the awareness factor like you're speaking of up there, it might all of a sudden just start grabbing hold, especially with a little bit of, like what Jeff's doing today, putting you on the where people can hear it. So, and by the way, I am a hunter, but in this country, we did a lot of terrible things hunting in the past, meat markets and all that, but we turned a lot of it around with duck stamps and fishing gear taxes to take care of stuff. It's kind of that mentality I'm bringing to the table.
All right. Thanks for that, John. Appreciate it.
John, you're absolutely right, you know, and that's one of the reasons that I'm actually right now in the U.S. and I'm focusing on speaking at as many venues, trying to create the awareness so that I think once we create the awareness, you know, people can go and support conservation projects and help fund the rangers with uniform, you know, just shoes, backpacks, rifles, and so forth, so that we can try start winning this war. Without the awareness in the U.S. and in European countries, you know, we're gonna fail in Africa. We're already losing the war. As you know, John, You know, we're dealing with Al-Shabaab, we're dealing with Al-Qaeda, we're dealing with ISIS, we're dealing with M23. These are militant groups who are sending their people out in the bush. We're losing the war. So one of my focus is to try and educate and speak at as many venues as possible so that we can create the awareness, we can raise the funding, so we can put it to work and also engage people in the U.S. to be more proactive in the conservation process of Africa.
If you separate the parts, though, you certainly got the terrorist groups involved because they find an easy path to funding. Take out several elephants, all of a sudden you're several thousand dollars richer for having sold the tusks on the black market. If you change the market, though, if you change the demand, and you talked about the difficulty of changing China with a billion people, but are there cultural avenues that have been tried? For example, the Fur is Murder campaign in the United States. I don't know if something like that would work in China, where you simply tell people, hey, this is gross, you're going to end up with no elephants, and so your children's children will not have ivory because there will be no elephants.
You know, China is a tough country, you know, with its politics. You know, it's not a very open country. I remember very openly, I was at the CITES convention in 2013, and we engaged China, and China said, well, this is not our problem, this is an African problem. Since 2013, China has come, you know, has had a bit of change in heart and is now beginning to, I think, with the world pressure. So I think, you know, it's important to create world pressure. It's important to talk about, you know, possible sanctions, to engage them to help change the culture in China. You know, a little bit more advertising, billboards. I know Yao Ming, the big baseball player, is very active. You know, he was in Kenya and he spent some time. Li Bingbing is another film actress in China who's very well known. She's been out to Africa. So we've been encouraging people from China to come out to Africa, see these elephants, see the value of these elephants, see these big, humble giants that we have, and take the message back to China. So at least hopefully through their eyes, because they're public figures, that, you know, the public will start having a change of heart and change of mind. But there's a lot of work that needs to be done on this.
All right, but certainly some of those cultural buttons are beginning to be pressed.
Absolutely. Yeah. We're working on that already.
Is there some reluctance to place sanctions on China because of the fact that China is such a big economic player? I mean, it seems like the United States in particular would be a little reluctant to punch China too hard because China provides a lot of the stuff that Americans buy.
Absolutely, and that's the biggest challenge that we face is, you know, that, you know, everybody's scared of China, not just the United States, even all the African countries, because we're so dependent on China. That nobody seems to want to speak up against China. Like I said, I was at the convention in Thailand, the CITES convention, and I was very disappointed personally. You know, I'm the guy on the ground. I'm the guy that's getting shot at, and it, you know, you would expect that you go to a CITES convention and they would be supportive, and I found that Italy, France, you know, Greece. I mean, nobody was willing to challenge China. It was like, just ignore them. Let them get away with what they're doing because they're such an economic power. The world is in financial crisis. We need financial support. We need aid from China. So nobody wants to speak up against China. So that's the other battle that we're facing. That's more political. So I don't want to get in the political arena. But, you know, that's the reality of it. Is nobody wants to seem to want to challenge China at this point in Africa where, you know, our giants are falling rapidly.
I should have figured there was no accident that you were in the Rogue Valley because of the fact that there is the presence of the only forensics laboratory for animal crimes in the world, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Forensics Lab, located in Ashland, Oregon. And you'll actually be there today, is that right?
In fact, after this radio show, I'm actually heading there, and I'm going to be spending a couple of hours there visiting the facility.
And it does help in tracking down poachers, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. I'm very thankful that, you know, Ashland here in Oregon is hosting or, you know, has this facility here, because this facility is an incredible facility. It's a very important facility, not just for the U.S., but also for the world.
Do you get a sense that you're even coming close to a corner to be turned, or is it still a long way off from getting to a point where you feel like you're beginning to get momentum to stop the poaching?
We're beginning to get some momentum to try and stop the poaching, but we're still far afield. And if we don't keep the pressure on, it can turn very quickly because, you know, there's a lot of pressure. Like I said, you know, Africa is wild. There's a lot of, you know, political pressures going on right now with all these different Al-Qaeda, Al-Shabaab groups that are destabilizing Africa. And we need to keep this going because if we stop, they'll just come back. You know, if you don't have a patrol in the bush for a month, I promise you, the word gets out very quickly saying, oh, they've run out of money, They'd have no money for food, they have no money for ammunition, and the guys come in very quickly. So we got to keep this up. We're still a long way away from solving the problem. One of the things that I'm pushing for now is a global ban. I think it's time. With 450,000 elephants, you know, it's not sustainable. We need to stop and put a global ban on ivory now. It's time. The world steps up and addresses the issue.
Well, people are certainly asking how they can get a hold of you. We do have a link to the African Wildlife Trust at our website and on our Facebook page. There's obviously the picture of Pratik in the studio on the Facebook page. Any other avenues people should use to get a hold of you?
They can follow me on Facebook. Like you said, they can follow me on website. There's a donate button which says Friends of Serengeti. You know, I grew up in the Serengeti. I grew up with Jane Goodall and Hugo Van Lawick and their son. So, you know, they're close to family, friends when growing up. So, yeah, no, anything that you folks can do will be highly appreciated.
All right. Pratik Patel is the founder and chair of the African Wildlife Trust. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you very much.